Thanks, guys. Tim, alcoholic. Nice welcome, yes. Okay, so we're on page 200. Women suffer too. Page 200. So this is the story of Marty Mann, Mrs. Marty Mann, and she was instrumental in getting a lot of our federal guidelines implemented that help us as alcoholics and develop policy and whatnot. And she did that with Senator Hughes back in the late 60s, and some of the passing of policies was done in 1970. I'll go into a little bit more depth of that when we get further into her story, but I kind of wanted to set it up. This is the first woman perspective that we're seeing in the big book. She came in as the first edition was already printed, so she's not in the first edition. She's in second, third, and fourth edition. Not the first woman in AA. First woman in that was approached with the program was in Akron. Her name was Lil, and I did read some stuff that she eventually did get sober, not in AA, through religious means. And then after her, a significant figure would be Florence Rankin. Her claim to fame was her story was in the first edition. A Feminine Victory was the name of that of her story. It was taken out because she eventually did drink. She had a full year sobriety when the manuscript was done, and they were marinating on what to call the book. One of the leading titles of the book was to be 100 Men. And she said, wait, time out. I'm a woman, and I got a year's sobriety. So we had to think real quick. Didn't change the text. It was a little bit too late for that. But the title of the book, other options were discussed. One was The Way Out. And next week's story... that author was living down in Washington, and he went to, I guess, the Library of Congress to find out how many other books were named The Way Out. And it turned out there were already 12. And that would make this one 13. And that was a no-no. And so that was not done. And then started kicking around a name that was used... already in some circles, in some letters and whatnot, Alcoholics Anonymous, and eventually that was voted on and was the choice. And then ultimately our fellowship is called Alcoholics Anonymous based off of the title of this book. So Florence Rankin, A Feminine Victory, was sort of the second woman in AA, year sobriety, went out, died drunk, fatal illness. And then Mrs. Marty Mann was visited by Mary C. while she was still in a psychiatric hospital. And Mary almost had the claim to fame of longest continuous sobriety, but she did have a slip in 1944, which sort of broke that chain a little bit. And there were some other women, you know, later on that came that had long continuous sobriety. But Mary C. could have had the number one seat there. So don't go out, because you could screw up your numbers there. So again, Lil from Akron, Florence Rankin, Mary C., and then the next big female significant person is Marty Mann. Women suffer too. Despite great opportunities, alcohol nearly ended her life. An early member, she spread the word among women in our pioneering period. What was I saying from far away as if in a delirium? I heard my own voice calling someone, Dorothy, talking of dress shops, of jobs. The words came clearer. This sound of my voice frightened me as it came closer. And suddenly, there I was, talking, I knew not what, to someone I'd never seen before that very moment. Abruptly, I stopped speaking. Where was I? I waked up in strange rooms before, fully dressed on a bed or a couch. I waked up in my own room, in or on my own bed, not knowing what hour or day it was, afraid to ask. But this was different. This time I seemed to be already awake, sitting upright in a big easy chair, in the middle of an animated conversation with a perfectly strange young woman who didn't appear to think it strange. She was chatting on, pleasantly and comfortably. Terrified, I looked around. I was in a large, dark, rather poorly furnished room, the living room of a basement flat. Cold chills started chasing up and down my spine. My teeth were chattering. My hands were shaking, so I tucked them under me to keep them from flying away. My fright was real enough, but it didn't account for these violent reactions. I knew what they were, all right. A drink would fix them. It must have been a long time since I had my last drink, but I didn't dare to ask the stranger for one. I must get out of here. In any case, I must get out of here before I let slip my abysmal ignorance of how I came to be here, and she realized that I was stark, staring mad. I was mad. I must be. So we're seeing early stages of DTs there, right? We're seeing the imagery she's painting. The shakes grew worse, and I looked at my watch. 6 o'clock. It had been 1 o'clock when I had last remembered looking. I'd been sitting comfortably in a restaurant with Rita, drinking my 6th martini, and hoping the waiter would forget about the lunch order, at least long enough for me to have a couple more. I'd only had 2 with her, but I'd managed 4 in the 15 minutes I'd waited for her. And of course, I had the usual uncounted swigs from the bottle as I painfully got up and did my slow, spasmodic dressing. In fact, I had been in very good shape at 1 o'clock, feeling no pain. What could have happened? That had been in the center of New York, on noisy 42nd Street. This was obviously a quiet residential section. Why had Dorothy brought me here? Who was she? How had I met her? I had no answers, and I dared not ask. She gave no sign of recognizing anything wrong. But what had I been doing for those lost 5 hours? My brain whirled. I might have done terrible things and wouldn't even know it. Somehow, I got out of there and walked 5 blocks past brownstone houses. There wasn't a bar in sight, but I found the subway station. The name on it was unfamiliar, and I had to ask the way to Grand Central. It took 3/4 of an hour and 2 changes to get there. Back to my starting point. I had been in the remote reaches of Brooklyn. That night, I got very drunk, which was usual, but I remembered everything, which was very unusual. I remembered going through what my sister assured me was my nightly procedure of trying to find Willie Seabrook's name in the telephone book. I remembered my loud resolution to find him and ask him to help me get into that asylum he had written about. So Willie Seabrook was an author of the time and a best-selling author and alcoholic, ended up being institutionalized in a institution called Bloomingdale in Westchester County. And when he came out, he wrote a book about it called Asylum. So that's what she was referring to here. I remembered asserting that I was going to do something about this, that I couldn't go on. I remembered looking longingly at the window as an easier solution and shuddering at the memory of that other window 3 years before and the 6 agonizing months in a London hospital ward. I remembered filling the peroxide bottle in my medicine chest with gin in case my sister found the bottle I hid under the mattress. And I remembered the creeping horror and the interminable night in which I slept for short spells and woke dripping with cold sweat and shaken with utter despair to drink hastily from my bottle and mercifully pass out again. You're mad, you're mad, you're mad, pounded through my brain with each returning ray of consciousness, and I drowned the refrain with drink. That went on for 2 more months before I landed in a hospital and started my slow fight back to normalcy. I had been going on like that for over a year. I was 32 years old. When I look back on that last horrible year of constant drinking, I wonder how I survived it, either physically or mentally. For there were, of course, periods of clear realization of what I had become, attended by memories of what I had been, what I had expected to be. And the contrast was pretty shattering. Sitting in a Second Avenue bar, accepting drinks from anyone who offered, after my small stake was gone. Or sitting at home alone with the inevitable glass in my hand. I would remember, and remembering, I would drink faster, seeking speedy oblivion. It was hard to reconcile this ghastly present with the simple facts of the past. My family had money. I had never known denial of any material desire. The best boarding schools and a finishing school in Europe had fitted me for the conventional role of debutante and young matron. So Marty's from Chicago. Obviously, the family had the means. And she was a debutante who came out in 1927 and married immediately after. We'll come up to that. The times in which I grew up, the Prohibition era, immortalized by Scott Fitzgerald and John Held Jr., had taught me to be gay with the gayest. My own inner urges led me to outdo them all. The year after coming out, I married. So far, so good, all according to plan, like thousands of others. But then the story became my own. So she marries a John B. in 1927. They're on a drunken spree. They don't even get married in a traditional sense. They elope and go down to New Orleans and get married down there. And then ultimately get some sort of more formal religious service after they sobered up. So what does that tell you? This is going to be a bad story, right? My husband was an alcoholic, and since I had only contempt for those without my own amazing capacity, the outcome was inevitable. My divorce coincided with my father's bankruptcy, and I went to work, casting off all allegiances and responsibilities to anyone other than myself. Sounds like selfish, self-centered, right? This is the main ingredient that's going to lead her down the path of true alcoholism. For me, work was only a different means to the same end, to be able to do exactly what I wanted to do. For the next 10 years, I did just that. For greater freedom and excitement, I went abroad to live. I had my own business, successful enough for me to indulge most of my desires. I met all the people I wanted to meet. I saw all the places I wanted to see. I did all the things I wanted to do. I was increasingly miserable. What does that sound like? It sounds like in step one, life is unmanageable. So when we live on self-will for only our own benefit, we're going to feel like crap. It's going to be an unmanageable life, even if you have everything. She's got it. She's drinking, but she's got everything else. Life's unmanageable. And the word miserable is the same thing. Headstrong and willful, I rushed from pleasure to pleasure and found the returns diminishing to the vanishing point. Hangovers began to assume monstrous proportions, and the morning drink became an urgent necessity. Blanks were more frequent, and I seldom knew how I'd got home. When my friends suggested I was drinking too much, they were no longer my friends. I moved from group to group, then from place to place, and went on drinking. With a creeping insidiousness, drink had become more important than anything else. It no longer gave me pleasure. It merely dulled the pain. But I had to have it. I was bitterly unhappy. No doubt I had been an exile too long. I should go home to America. Geographic. I did. And to my surprise, my drinking got worse. It's always progressive. Always progressive. When I entered a sanitarium for prolonged and intensive psychiatric treatment, I was convinced I was having a serious mental breakdown. So she's going to the sanitarium, not for booze, because she thought she was having a mental breakdown. And she initially started off in the hospital Bellevue in Manhattan, and she was seen by Robert Foster Kennedy. And, you know, when I found that out, I said, wait, I've seen that name someplace before. Let's turn to page 569. is the medical view on AA. And who's the first character who gives the view? Foster Kennedy. He's a neurologist. This is what he says. Second paragraph. This organization of Alcoholics Anonymous calls on two of the greatest reservoirs of power known to man, religion and that instinct for association with one's fellows, the herd instinct. So what is he talking about? He's talking about a spiritual program that has a fellowship component. Like, he got it. He understood what the gig was. I think our profession must take appreciative cognizance of this great therapeutic weapon. If we do not do so, we shall stand convicted of emotional sterility and of having lost the faith that moves mountains, without which medicine can do little. I'm not going to read the next one, but just the third guy down is Dr. Harry Thibault. So I'm not going to read it, but it's going to relate to the story here. Back to page 204, please. So she's originally treated by Dr. Kennedy at Bellevue. She is broke, so now she becomes a charity case. She has no money. She started off with, you know, kind of the servant level, and now she has no money. And this is what she says. I wanted to help, and I tried to cooperate. As the treatment progressed, I began to get a picture of myself, of the temperament that had caused me so much trouble. I had been hypersensitive, shy, idealistic. My inability to accept the harsh realities of life had resulted in a disillusioned cynic, clothed in a protective armor against the world's misunderstanding. So what do we know about that? Page 417. Acceptance is the answer to everything. So she's saying that she's even getting it here, that because I was unable to accept things, that contributed to the pain that she was currently in. That armor had turned into prison walls, locking me in a loneliness and fear. All I had left was an iron determination to live my own life in spite of the alien world. And here I was, an inwardly frightened, outwardly defiant woman who desperately needed a prop to keep going. Alcohol was that prop, and I didn't see how I could live without it. When my doctor told me I should never touch a drink again, I couldn't afford to believe him. I had to persist in my attempts to get straightened out enough to be able to use the drinks I needed without their turning on me. Besides, how could he understand? He wasn't a drinking man. He didn't know what it was to need a drink, nor what a drink could do for one in a pinch. I wanted to live, not in a desert, but in a normal world. And my idea of a normal world was being among people who drank. Teetotalers were not included. And I was sure that I couldn't be with people who drank without drinking. In that I was correct. I couldn't be comfortable with any kind of people without drinking. I never had been. Naturally, in spite of my good intentions, in spite of my protective life behind sanitarium walls, I several times got drunk and was astounded and badly shaken. There was the point at which my doctor gave me the book Alcoholics Anonymous to read. So we're talking April 1939, which does coincide beautifully. That's when the big book is printed, April 1939. She didn't get the book. She got a manuscript. So the doctor I mentioned before, Dr. Harry Thibault, was at this sanitarium, which was Blythewood Sanitarium. So he was a psychiatric a doctor at that facility. As the big book went was going to go to print, they sent out 400 manuscripts to various doctors and religious folk to get their opinion on things. One of these manuscripts goes to Dr. Tebow. Marty Mann, who's now a charity case at this facility, gets the manuscript. And she reads it. And we're going to hear what happens from there. So this might be more like March 39. Big book is printed April 39. The first chapters were a revelation to me. I wasn't the only person in the world who felt and behaved like this. I wasn't mad or vicious. I was a sick person. I was suffering from an actual disease that had a name and symptoms like diabetes or cancer or TB. And a disease was respectable, not a moral stigma. But then I hit a snag. I couldn't stomach religion. And I didn't like the mention of God or any of the other capital letters. If that was the way out, it wasn't for me. I was an intellectual, and I needed an intellectual answer, not an emotional one. I told my doctor so in no uncertain terms. I wanted to learn to stand on my own feet, not to change one prop for another, and an intangible and dubious one at that. And so on and on for several weeks while I grudgingly plowed through some more of the offending book and felt more and more hopeless about myself. So key ingredient, gotta be hopeless. So reading the book and not accepting or fighting or deliberating about what's in the book, she's feeling more and more hopeless. Good. Then the miracle happened to me. It isn't always so sudden with everyone, but I ran into a personal crisis that filled me with a raging and righteous anger. And as I fumed helplessly and planned to get good and drunk and show them, my eye caught a sentence in the book lying open on my bed. We cannot live with anger. The walls crumbled and the light streamed in. I wasn't trapped. I wasn't helpless. I was free, and I didn't have to drink to show them. This wasn't religion. This was freedom. Freedom from anger and fear. Freedom to know happiness and freedom to know love. I went to a meeting to see for myself this group of freaks or bums who had done this thing. So she's talking about going to her first meeting. It's April 11th, 1939. April 11th, first meeting. Where is she going? 182 Clinton Street. She's going to Bill Wilson's house. That's the only meeting. So she's in Brooklyn again. It's funny how the story started in Brooklyn. She's back in Brooklyn. To go into a gathering of people was the sort of thing that all my life, from the time I left my private world of books and dreams to meet the real world of people and parties and jobs, had left me feeling an uncomfortable outsider, needing the warming stimulus of drinks to join in. I went trembling into a house in Brooklyn filled with strangers, and I found I had come home at last to my own kind. There is another meaning for the Hebrew word that in the King James Version of the Bible is translated salvation. It is to come home. I had found my salvation. I wasn't alone anymore. That was the beginning of a new life, a fuller life, a happier life than I had ever known or believed possible. I had found friends, understanding friends, who often knew what I was thinking and feeling better than I knew myself, and who didn't allow me to retreat into my prison of loneliness and fear over a fancied slight or hurt. Talking things over with them, great floods of enlightenment showed me myself as I really was, and I was like them. We all had hundreds of character traits, fears, and phobias, likes and dislikes in common. Suddenly, I could accept myself, faults and all, as I was, for weren't we all like that? And accepting, I felt a new inner comfort and the willingness and strength to do something about the traits I couldn't live with. So it sounds like she's in the steps. This is exactly what that's saying. So she took her maiden name back. She had married John B. I don't know his last name. She took her maiden name back of Mann, but she always did Mrs. Marty Mann. And it was probably very common in those days. I don't know, actually. But it turns out that she discovered that she's gay. So because she was working within AA, and this was before the traditions, so she used her name a lot and whatnot, it was not considered acceptable at that time to come out. She came out as a debutante. You wouldn't come out being gay as easily, particularly if you're working with an organization such as this. And her long-term life partner is Priscilla P. Priscilla P. Oh, and Bill Wilson was her sponsor. Bill Wilson was her sponsor. Okay. It didn't stop there. They knew what to do about those black abysses that yawned, ready to swallow me when I felt depressed or nervous. There was a concrete program designed to secure the greatest possible inner security for us longtime escapists. The feeling of impending disaster that had haunted me for years began to dissolve as I put into practice more and more of the 12 steps. It worked. An active member of AA since 1939, I feel myself a useful member of the human race at last. I have something to contribute to humanity since I am peculiarly qualified as a fellow sufferer to give aid and comfort to those who have stumbled and fallen over this business of meeting life. So as it turns out, she did have a couple of slips later on in sobriety, with double-digit sobriety. And it wasn't talked about because she did have such a prominent position. Everybody has their own journey, and I don't think it detracted at all from her contributions. I think I did mention this already, maybe I didn't. She is responsible for having created the National Council on Alcoholism. And all of your federal guidelines are all based off of work that she did with Senator Hughes at the time at a very high level. She's considered very instrumental at Yale University, was the big alcohol learning center at the alcoholism learning center. That's where Dr. Jelinek is out of, as in the Jelinek curve. If anybody's not seen that, that's an interesting Google, the Jelinek curve. What's the big place to learn about alcoholism now? It's not Yale anymore, so it's not. It's a sort of a trick. Rutgers. No, educational. Yes, you would know a lot at rehab. Yes, that's probably the number one place to learn. But even for non-alcoholics, the training area for alcoholism is Rutgers now. It used to be Yale. Okay. Business meeting. I get my greatest thrill of accomplishment from the knowledge that I have played a part in the new happiness achieved by countless others like myself. The fact that I can work again and earn my living is important but secondary. I believe that my once overweening self-will has finally found its proper place. Isn't that what Bill talks about? The correct use of instinct, like drive and whatnot, can be used correctly. The service of others. For I can say many times daily, thy will be done, not mine, and mean it. So we're going to end there tonight. Marty Mann died on, bless you, Marty Mann died on 7/22/1980, and Priscilla, who had Alzheimer's for years, died in 82. And I guess whatever cemetery Marty, probably Protestant, wouldn't allow Priscilla to be buried with her. So ultimately she was cremated and her ashes were spread in the Long Island Sound. Marty ended up living in Easton, Connecticut, And I believe she's responsible, she was responsible for starting a Greenwich, Connecticut meeting, which was ongoing until very recently, like maybe 5 years ago. It dissolved for some reason, but probably less alcoholics there now. But anyway, that's all I got. Thanks so much.